Welcome back to the Physio Foundations podcast, where we talk about the knowledge and skills that provide the foundation of expert clinical practice. So today I'm talking to Dr. Malia Ho. So Malia is a sports podiatrist and a senior lecturer with us here within the Doctor of Podiatric Medicine course at Monash University. And Malia has over 20 years experience in clinical practice in podiatry and research and education. Malia has a Bachelor of Podiatry with honours from the University of Salford in the UK. She's got a Master's by Research from the National University of Singapore and a PhD in Physical Education and Sports Science from Nanyang Technological University in Singapore. Oh, that's not where it ends, though. She's got a grad cert in adult and tertiary education. So Malia is running out of space on her office wall for hanging all her certificates, and she needs a new office. So before coming to work with us at Monash, Malia was the head of the podiatry program at Central Queensland University. For our overseas listeners, that's the north of, on the east coast of Australia, up the top where it's nice and warm. And before that, the principal podiatrist in Singapore Sports Medicine Centre. So she's done a lot. She's got a lot of podiatry and health professions knowledge to share with us. So I can't wait to get her on and have a chat about all of this. So Malia Ho, welcome to Physio Foundations.
Hey, thanks, Lou. Thanks for having me today. I'm very honoured. Can't wait to share some of the things that I've gone through and experienced.
Yeah, absolutely. So what did I miss in my introduction? Anything else that you would add there?
No, I think you've pretty much covered it all. In a nutshell.
It's good. 20 years in 1 minute. So let's talk about your professional background a bit more and your interests, and it might lead into some of your physio or some of your podiatry education and some of the insights we can take away for physiotherapy practice. So tell us a bit more about how you became a podiatrist and the work that led you here.
Yeah, so I guess I became a podiatrist very much by accident. So I was really interested in physics in high school. So I was actually going to become an engineer. So what happened was at the end of my year 12 exams, and I studied in Singapore, so it would be the equivalent of the A levels. I was actually looking to do some internship in an engineering firm. But then before I got to that, I received a flyer to say that, the hospitals are providing paid internship for students who might be interested in a profession in allied health. They paid $5 an hour, which to me at that time was a lot of money. So I was like, let's go for it. So I took up that opportunity. I was attached to a hospital for 3 months. And during the 3 months, it was actually a time where Singapore was also looking at recruiting people to be in the allied health profession. So I was there for 3 months. I spent some time with the physio, with the podiatrist, with the dietitians, with the occupational therapist. And at the end of the 3 months, I made the decision that podiatry was what I really wanted to do. I was able to marry my interest in physics with the clinical work that was involved in podiatry. So I took up a scholarship with the Singapore government. So it was a fully paid scholarship. I went overseas to study for 3 years. Everything was paid for. The only catch is that when I finished my studies, I had to work for the Singapore government for 8 years.
8 years, okay.
Yeah, that's right. So that was it has reduced to 6 years now, but it was eight years during my time. But it was an excellent opportunity for me to have really good exposure. I learned a lot. So I spent 4 years in the public hospital where I was involved in high-risk foot management. And during that time, I did my master's. And because I loved engineering and biomechanics, my master's research was actually looking at how effective was total contact inlays in offloading diabetic neuropathic ulcers. And then after that, I was moved on to primary care. So we're looking at more at prevention than actually treatment. And then after 8 years with the hospitals, family caught up. So I got married, had kids, and I realized that I needed more time with them. So the opportunity to work at the sports clinic in private practice came up, and I took it up. So I worked part-time during that period. So I worked in the mornings, picked up my kids in the afternoon, spend time with them. And then that was how I spent some of my time juggling between work and family. And I think it was 2 years into working at the Sports Medicine Center, I thought that, oh, actually, I'd like to do my PhD. It was one of my bucket list. So I incorporated that as well. So at one point I was podiatrist, mom, and student.
Amazing.
After I finished my PhD, then the opportunity to teach in Australia came. So I moved my entire family from Singapore to Australia. So that's the story of my life, kind of. But I think one of the things that really impacted me was when I was doing my PhD, literally in the afternoon, I was doing homework together with my kids. So by that time, my kids were in primary school, so they were doing homework and I was doing homework together with them, or I was writing together with them. And I think that that was, like, in hindsight, that's what I would really love to instill in my students as well. It's the concept of lifelong learning. That, you know, it's not like you do a 3 or 4 year course in physiotherapy or podiatry and then you graduate and, like, you're the expert and now you go and you start treating patients. You know, you're actually still learning as you go along, and you actually never stop learning. So I think that's the one thing that I feel was really important in my life, in my learning journey, that I, you know, the more I learn, the more I feel that I need to learn more. And I guess that's how you probably feel as well, Luke.
That's a very healthy place to be in, though, isn't it? That, that feeling that you need to learn more, but also not being too consumed with the anxiety of what you don't know, just being comfortable with knowing that you'll be learning across your lifespan. That's a really healthy position to be in. So you're a podiatrist, a mum, and a PhD student at that stage, and you had this PhD on the bucket list, and I'm sure you had moments during that where you thought, hang on, this is a lot of work. What am I doing?
Yeah. I think at one point I was like, what did I get myself into? I was like, but I think during my whole journey, I was supported with really good people around me. So I have to acknowledge that it's not something that, you know, I could have done on my own. So like my husband, Jeff, he was really integral in helping me with that. So he took the kids out to play when I needed the weekend to write. My employer at that time as well, they gave me protected time, especially when I needed to collect data for my research study. I actually took 6 months off towards the end to finish up writing up my thesis. So it's like the last dash. So I was allowed to take some time off. My project supervisor was also very helpful in the sense that he would meet me at places near my clinic, so that instead of traveling to the university and having meetings there, he was really accommodative. So I think it was these elements that actually helped to make it possible. So like what you said, it's not possible to do it on your own. You have a good support system around you. It takes a village to raise anybody, I think.
Yeah, particularly Jeff and your employers and colleagues. Yeah. Understanding the demands of a PhD and then, you know, being able to support you like that. So that's, I mean, I think that's an important side point to make when you talk about people's journey, how you got to where you are here, is that it's very committing. You moved your entire family to Australia after doing your PhD as well. So that's very committed as well. So you've really put it all on the line. So if I go back a step, 8 years in the hospital before going into the sports clinic, how much of your hospital experience, you mentioned some of the conditions that you were sort of specializing in, and ulcers was one of them, but how much of that primary care and that hospital work did you bring with you to be a sports podiatrist?
I think that is a very good point, and I think that is the beauty about being a podiatrist or a physiotherapist for that matter, because there are different subspecialities. And moving from the hospital to the sports clinic, it was almost like a change in career altogether.
Yeah, a bit.
And I kind of had The basic principles were there in the sense that the biomechanical principles were the same, but it was almost like a different job altogether. And I felt that I had to learn from scratch again. So again, it was a really conducive clinic that I worked in. There was a sports physician there, a physio, a sports trainer. So basically I sat in with them at the beginning just to see what they were doing and how they manage patients. And then I kind of found a way of how to fit in as well as a podiatrist in that team. And then after that, working together as part of that multidisciplinary team. So we basically really much learned from each other at that point. And so I think for me, it was one of those things as well, like when you move from one aspect of podiatry to another aspect of podiatry, it can be very different. But as long as you've got the basic principles, it's always possible to build on that knowledge. And you continue learning and you continue reading, you continue, learning from patients as well.
Yeah, I've had this discussion on this podcast on previous episodes a number of times with students and graduates about the decision, do I go into the private or the public sector first? And it's quite helpful to listen to you reflecting on 20 years so far in your career and saying, well, they're kind of connected, but they're very almost different careers as well. But yeah, the way that you moved into the private world was very collaborative. So you were learning off them, they were learning off you, and you must have been quite, upfront with what you didn't know as well. And you were comfortable to say, well, I don't know this. I'm going to sit in and watch and I'm going to learn from how you manage a client in this setting.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that is the, I think that's the thing that we need to bring into any environment that we work in is like we come in, for me as a podiatrist, obviously I would know more about the foot than anyone else. But then, you know, in terms of everything else, a person is not just the foot or the lower limb, everything's connected. So everything that I know is going to be connected to another part of the body. So in fact, I had a patient who came in actually with, he was complaining of neck pain and headaches. And then, you know, after examining him and everything, we realized, oh, he had a limb length discrepancy, which probably threw his whole spine out. And so we're working together with the physio on that. So, you know, sometimes it's just things like that that appear before you and you realize actually a person is very connected and you can't just go, oh, you know, I'm the foot expert and I'm only going to look at the foot, or I only specialize in a certain area. So it's really important to work together. And I think for me as well, starting off in the public sector gave me certain really good habits. So, you know, fresh out from school, I had certain ideas of what a clinic should be like. And then going to a big hospital, having audits and, quality audits that we need to adhere to, so certain protocols. And I think a lot of the OH&S and infection control good habits were learned and developed there. So even when I went to the private practice, a lot of that just flowed through as well. So I think at this point in time, I'm still really, cognizant about when I take off my gloves, when I put it on, using alcohol-based hand rubs and things like that. And I think if you were working in private practice and if you were working on your own, it's really easy to let these little things slip because you're on your own. No one's really watching over you. But I think because these habits were developed in me really at a really early stage, it kind of carried on. It became second nature. Now it feels odd when I don't have gloves on when I'm treating a patient, for example. You know, so I think it's nice to have that baseline to work on and to develop those good habits in the early stages of life.
Yeah, that's an interesting take because hospital and public sector work generally is more, it was highly organized and, you mentioned protocols and OHS and that's an interesting take on that. So what about that? What from your clinical work have you taken into education? I guess I could start with a broader question. What's your educational philosophy? So you're working here at Monash, you're in the Doctor of Podiatric Medicine course. Tell us a bit about that and what's your focus in education?
I think so. My focus in education is really looking at how technology has changed the way we teach and we learn. So, say for example, in the area of 3D printing, you know, when I was going through uni, we looked at two-dimensional pictures.
Yeah,
it's a bonus if it were in color.
So, yeah, that's right.
But now we actually print 3D models, so students can look at it in three dimensionals. They can rotate it. They can, you know, appreciate where things are in space. So I think that's really good, and that's how we should be progressing. I think the other thing is, again, in the area of technology, is that how technology has changed how knowledge is available to us. So I think, again, going through school, the knowledge we had came from our lecturers, or it came from books that we read or encyclopedias that were sitting on the shelf collecting dust. But, you know, and you actually had to seek out the information. You had to go through the index, you had to flip pages, literally. But at this time, knowledge is literally at your fingertips. You know, you just had to Google. So I think for me, it's really about not just as a lecturer teaching the knowledge, but also teaching critical learning or critical thinking skills. So how do you take the knowledge that you've got and apply it in a particular setting? So I think it's, you know, moving more towards case-based learning, where you've got a problem, your toolbox, and what are the tools that you've got, and let's select the most appropriate one for this person that you're managing.
Mm. Yeah, that's so important, because more than ever, we have all the information you could ever want freely available. And it makes a lot of people out there have questioned, well, what is the value of tertiary education? What, you know, and there's lots of dissenting opinions on the internet, of course, and ranging from people claiming that you don't need universities and university education anymore, through to people on the more conservative end. But really, you've nailed it there. You've got all the information you could ever want, not only in textbooks, but, you know, in engaging 3D images that you can use. And you've got so many video summaries, there's so many pay-per-view professional development resources out there. There's almost too much information. And what's left to learn in university? And then the answer there is critical thinking.
That's right.
And learning how to learn, and lifelong learning, which you were talking about before.
That's right.
And we should go back a step to explain what your role is. So your role is, you know, a coordinator within the new Doctor of Podiatric Medicine, so postgrad podiatry course at Monash. So tell us a bit more about the course and your experiences setting things up.
Okay. I think being a new course, the amazing thing is that we can put in things that we feel are really relevant. And because the three of us are clinicians as well as academics, we've really incorporated a lot of the clinical aspects into the academic field. So a lot of our curriculum is written up based on, all right, this is what you need to know, but in a clinical setting, this is what it will look like. So instead of teaching things in silos, so I think instead of teaching this person has diabetes, or this is what rheumatoid arthritis looks like, these are the clinical signs and symptoms, we kind of go through that very quickly. But then we go into case-based learning. So this person comes in with diabetes as well as rheumatoid arthritis, and she's got a foot. They've got a foot problem. So how do we manage it? You know. So I think we're really incorporating all the case-based learning and making it really authentic, so that, you know, when students go off on placements, they're not kind of shocked by, oh, you know, we thought that this is what we would be seeing, and in real life, this is not it at all. So I think everything's very realistic, very authentic. So I think that's how we are, you know, crafting the course. I think the other really important thing is that we want to instill in our students the fact that, yes, you're a podiatrist, and yes, you have really good clinical skills, but as a podiatrist, you need to be a good human to start with. So I think I've, you know, had my fair share of doctors who, you know, I've talked to with a problem, and they're like, oh, you know what, you know, just sleep it off. It's not really a problem. You'll be fine in 2 days, but not really listening to what my problem is. And I think that's what we want to instill in our students, to really be listening to the person in front of them. So what really exactly is the problem, and then addressing it in a holistic way. So one of the things that really came up to me was I was talking to one of my students who used to be a pharmacist. So she was just sharing some, you know, her experience as a pharmacist. And she was like, you know, one day a person came up to her and said, oh, this person can't sleep. So, you know, from a pharmacist's perspective is, oh, let me give you some pills to help you sleep. But, you know, as she walked nearer the person, she kind of felt that there was a distinctive smell. And it smelled like a fungal infection. So she kind of probed and asked a few more questions. And then she realized that this person actually had a fungal infection under the skin. And that was causing an itch. And that was actually causing the reason why this person can't sleep. So the management was actually, let's manage the fungal infection. So I think that's a really good example of how, you know, really listening to your patient and how really paying attention to your patient will actually lead to really good outcomes. And that's what I share with my students as well.
Yeah. And so you've hit on the topic of complexity, which is a reality that's sometimes hard to teach in university because you need to learn a lot of individual components, and rarely are people in the real world simple with their presentations, particularly in the public health system. The reason they're in hospital, or the reason they finally come and seek care, is because they have complex presentation. So that's really important in the way you teach it in university. So listening skills are really important for a podiatrist in that example you just gave. Well, everyone, we've had some funny weather here in Melbourne, Australia, and we've got obviously some sort of an internet issue where Marley and I are connecting via Zoom. So I'll edit all the mistakes out at the end. But what I was talking about before we just lost our connection there was in your example before with that patient, it's a really good example of complexity. And the reality is for students when they go out and practice that you can learn the individual components of healthcare, but people are in hospital or they're seeking care because their presentations are complex. And you really need to address that from the beginning in how we structure our education. So I thought that was a really good example. And in your example, listening skills were really important. So what other foundational knowledge or skills do you think are really important for a podiatrist or for a health professional in general?
Well, I guess, like I mentioned before, being a good listener is really important. And I think to be empathetic, that's really important as well. A lot of us go into a profession in allied health because we're, you know, compassionate to start with. But I think sometimes, you know, when you're working and you've got 10 minutes a patient and, you know, you kind of need to move things along, a lot of those things, you know, kind of get lost in the process. And I think for that reason, a lot of people actually end up burning out just because they're just churning out patients after a while. So I think it's really important to keep that really at the forefront. You know, why am I here for? Am I here to, you know, just remove calluses? Am I here to just, give patients a pair of orthotics? It's not that. But we're here to listen to what the patient is presenting with and to help the patient cope with it, you know. And it's not always use a pair of orthotics. It could be, you know, maybe you need to run less. Maybe you need to incorporate swimming into your exercise regime. So I think we just really need to keep that at the top of our minds when we're managing a patient.
Yeah. So that's really important because we've talked on this podcast before about the problem of attrition from the health professions and the sheer numbers of people who leave the health professions. And one thing we haven't talked about much has been that balance between empathy, which is a really important part of practice, and the risk of burnout. You have too much empathy on one side, potentially you're giving a bit too much of yourself personally. Yeah. And then coming back to why am I here? I like what you said before about being a good human. Start off with being a good human. and add some listening skills, and then using your natural empathy, and then you may come across, you know, view problems in a different way. Mm-hmm. And what other podiatry skills could we learn from as physiotherapists from you? So, I guess when would we refer to a podiatrist, say a physiotherapy student or a new grad in their first couple of years of practice, when should they refer to you as a podiatrist?
Well, I guess at the end of the day, similar to physiotherapists, podiatrists need to be really strong in their anatomy. So I think that's one of the things that comes through all the time, because students go, oh, anatomy is so complicated, or there's so many things to memorize. The names of the muscles are like Greek to me. So it's hard. But I think that's fundamental, because whether you're in high-risk sport or whether you're in sports or whether you're in pediatrics, the human anatomy is consistent throughout. And without the, you know, strong foundation in anatomy, everything kind of falls apart if you're not grounded strongly in that. And I think that is a very common trait with physiotherapists, where anatomy or human anatomy is really important, functional anatomy is really important. So I guess from the podiatrist perspective, like I said, I believe that everything is interconnected. So, you know, you might have a patient coming in with complaining of lower back pain, and you might assess the back and the pelvis and all that. But I think when it comes to, you know, I think a lot of the problems might stem from the lower limb. So like a limb length discrepancy, or they might have one foot that's flatter than the other. And I think that's when like a physiotherapist could work together with the podiatrist just to get that further insight into what might be happening in the lower limb, for example, that might be impacting on something higher up.
Yeah, so a good example might be some of those non-modifiable structural problems that potentially then a podiatrist can help with orthotics, for example, or an assessment or more detailed assessment. There's certainly some amazing podiatrists out there who do much more than prescribing orthotics. They do all types of other treatments. What other treatments do you do as a podiatrist?
Yeah, so I think I think in terms of orthotics, just like taking a step before that. So before we prescribe a pair of orthotics, like gait analysis is really important. So I think, again, using technology in gait analysis. So previously, you know, we would eyeball it, or we'd get patients to walk up and down the corridor 20 times just to see how they're walking. But it's really hard to assess anything when the patient's actually walking and walking away from you. So I think now with a treadmill, with motion capture apps that we can download on our phones or on our iPads, we actually train our students to use that to do gait analysis currently. So they're able to, you know, slow the movement down, they're able to draw lines, they're able to take actual measurements. So they're able to actually pick out, you know, what's actually, what may need to be adjusted or what may need to be amended for this person when they are walking. And that also extends to whatever activity that they're doing. So the person that comes to you is a runner or is a dancer, it doesn't make sense to have a look at them walking. So, you know, we get them running, or we get them, you know, actually moving around in the activity that's causing the discomfort or the pain. So that's in the area of musculoskeletal podiatry. So we do that, and then using that information that helps us to then prescribe the best orthotic or for the patient. And I guess because some of us are endorsed prescribers as well, there's also the extended scope that if the patient has some inflammation in the joint, we're able to provide, you know, corticosteroid injections. We're able to provide them with pain medication. So we're able to prescribe non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. So there's some of those components as well that we can assist with the patient coming in with a musculoskeletal condition.
Yeah, and I think plantar warts are another one where they're quite common and people don't like discussing them, but true. Can be really, really a problem for people's comfort in their feet and management of corns and things as well.
That's right. So podiatrists can with our clinical skills, we debride corns and calluses and warts. We also freeze it out. So liquid nitrogen. Some clinics have like a laser machine that, you know, lasers it out as well. So a range of electrotherapies that we can use to treat these skin lesions. So that's all part of the scope of a podiatrist as well.
Mm. So know a good podiatrist, and there's plenty of them. If you're a physiotherapist, then you can refer on when you pick up on these problems and work together. I really think there's a story there you started on at the beginning of this episode, which is you were going to become an engineer. And that was eerily similar to Susanna's story, actually, that's been discussed. My wife, Susanna, has been discussed on previous episodes. She was going to become an aeronautical engineer and had a bit of a serendipitous change of direction in high school. And so you've got this technology interest and this engineering brain. And yet when I ask you what the most important skills are for a health professional, you talk about being a good human and having empathy and listening. So I think that's a really interesting place to bring everything together, because you've got all this technology interest and this knowledge of engineering and biomechanics and the apps you can use to measure people's walking, for example. But you've also got an eye for the person themselves. I think that's a very important lesson for us all to think about. Is there anything else that you'd like, any final thoughts that you'd like to add?
I think one of the, I think, Luke, you brought up a really good point just now when people were talking about, what's the point of a university education if we are able to learn by ourselves? But I feel that, having a university education like I said, even a postgraduate education, investing in yourself is never something that's wasted. So although, yes, you can, read up online and everything, but if you've invested in a course to learn something, I think that in investing that money in yourself, you're always improving yourself. And I think it kind of ties in with what I said previously about being a lifelong learner, that, you're learning not by yourself, you're learning with a group of people. And I think there is value in learning with others. So I think, now in the podiatry course, and I'm sure in physiotherapy as well, we don't learn in silos. So we always have group work or teamwork. And even when we have practicals, we're kind of like practicing on each other. So there is value in learning in a group. There's value in getting peer feedback. There's value in learning from each other. And I think that's where a university education or further education actually brings you to that point where you're not thinking of just yourself and accumulating knowledge for yourself. You're learning with others, and then you're learning how to apply that knowledge in a real life setting with others around you and supported by others around you. So I think that's really important.
That is really important. Very well said. Yeah. And that's something, a message that will come up again and again on all of these episodes. So
I'm sure.
I feel like there's part 2 and 3 in the future, but I realize we're out of time today. And you've also, I know that you're very busy with all your work that you're doing. I really appreciate your time coming on, sharing some of your background and what got you to this point. I'm sure we can explore a bit more of your research and education topics next time, if there is a next time. But for now, thanks very much, Paula.
Looking forward to the next time. So
great.
Never Luke.
Yeah, that's it. I'm not stopping the podcast anytime soon. So there will be a next time. That's good to hear. So thanks a lot, Marley. I really appreciate you coming on for a chat.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, and all the best in the rest of your podcasts.
Thank you. So until next time, this is Marley and Luke wishing you all the very best with your studying, professional development, and lifelong learning.